Hi, and welcome to the Just Riding Along show.
Hello and welcome to episode 188. Tonight's show is brought to you by Charge Your Batteries. That's right, you should charge your batteries.
This is your reminder.
I'm going to leave it as a little teaser. I'll tell you what I've been doing. I rode the moto a little bit, I think. Yeah, rode the moto a little bit. And then did some working. Put my Jaffe back together as a single speed and took it for a little rip-a-rooney after work the other day. And then I don't even remember yesterday. Yesterday, I just was an adult, I guess. I don't know. And then today I went out and did a lap of Cottonwood, which, for those of you that don't know, it's kind of like the low country must-do ride for Salida. You leave town, you climb up to, like, what? A little over... How high is the top of Cottonwood? Like 8,500?
I think it tickles 10, maybe? I don't know. Let me look real quick. You keep talking.
I think it tickles 9, maybe. Because it's like an 1,800-ish foot climb up there. But it rolls a little bit. And as I'm leaving my coworker's house, buddy's coworker buddy, my Wahoo's like low battery. And it's telling me that my Axis has a low battery. And Derek's like, I got one. And I'm like, well, hold on. Let's stop in the shade and make sure it's not like the hard to change one. And stopped in the shade. My derailleur battery was low. And I was like, ah, cool. And he's like, you want to put this one on? And I was like, no, let's just go for it. Let's see what happens. And I rode up there and then rode a good bit of the... I rode all of the ride, really, and got to the top of the last little bit of climbing before you drop into town. You sort of do a big climb and you work your way back down, and then you can exit one way by sort of trending downward more and then riding back up river a bunch, finish with like a chicken dinner, or you can come up Prospector and drop down lower dunes and be like right in town. And at the top of Prospector, it stopped shifting. And Derek led the climbing on the road, and I led the descending on the trail, and he's, like, a little bit back, and I stop, and he's, like, he's got this funny face, and as he rolls up, I was, like, 2 hours and 15 minutes, and he's, like, okay. I'm, like, that's how long your battery lasts after you get a low battery warning. And he's, like, oh, here, and he hands me a battery that was fucking dead.
So his battery also died?
No, his pocket battery was dead.
Oh, okay.
And he's like, well, do you want to change into a better? And I was like, nope, I made this bed. I'm going to lie in it. So I just took off. And
we weren't that far from town then.
No, and I didn't have to pedal that much more.
Yeah.
So it was funny. So, yeah, just a reminder that you should charge your batteries every once in a while, because I definitely had not. So that was that. Yeah, that's right. I rode my bike more than once in 1 week. So there you go. Charge your batteries. Kenny, what have you been doing?
Let's see. I rode my moto on either Saturday or Sunday. Don't remember which. Did some more exploring in a place that I haven't ridden a whole lot. Found some cool stuff. More single track. Found some like cool hill climbs. It was fun. I rode the Suron Ultra B. Still a really good bike. It's about time for me to do a primary belt on it. It's got about 2,000 miles on it. So I'm just going to do... There's a Gates belt that runs from the motor to the jack shaft. And yeah, it's kind of just a wear item. And I don't want it to snap on a ride because it would not be a good time. So I'm going to go ahead and replace that. But it involves taking all the suspension off, which you should do anyway, really. Just like on a bike, you need to clean all the needle bearings and re-grease everything, make sure everything's in working order, retorque everything. So that's a project for the next couple weeks, maybe. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. Still rides awesome. Just went out solo. All of my friends are like either the big group of probably 10 Emoto people we had and some gas moto folks. They've all like kind of moved on and done other things, or they're in trouble with their wives, so they can't ride or whatever. So I usually just go out solo. The number of texts I get in the group chat of like, oh yeah, I'm going to go. And then like morning of like, oh, I can't go. I forgot, whatever. My neighbor's cat has a birthday, or, you know, my wife's Matt.
You got Matt with that one.
Oh, I'm just imagining a very grumpy old cat in like a tutu that also doesn't want to be there. Yeah. Like no one wants to be there.
Fucking candle in a can of Fancy Feast.
Yeah. Yeah, but the number of people who have...
Can you imagine what that would smell like if it kind of got a little too hot?
Yeah.
In the candle?
It'd be pretty gross. They smell... It smells bad when it's not on fire.
I'm going to rename this show title, It Smells Bad When It's Not on Fire.
Even when it's not on fire.
Okay.
But anyway, everyone's in trouble with their wives, so no one's allowed to go out and ride moto with me. So, Matt, if you want to come over and play sometime, that'd be cool.
All right. Cool. Let's do it.
But that's it.
Oh, man. I just read something cool about the new flight control. Flight attendant.
Yeah. God.
I'm always just going to fuck that up now and forever. Is it my turn?
It's your turn.
Oh, wait. I have one other thing that I did this week. So I rode Cottonwood today, and I came home, and I'm sitting on the couch eating some pretzels, and I'm like, man, I really need to eat real food and shower. And my phone rings, and it's 2025, so that's always weird. And it's old Tom P giving me a call. And he's like, hey, man. I'm like, what's up? He's like, drop my moto. I'm like, okay. Where are you? And he's like, at the top of 12. And I was like, okay. Send me a pin. I'll leave in 5 minutes. And I was like, I haven't been up there recently. Can I bring the Subaru or do I drive the Nissan? He's like, Subaru's fine. I was like, all right, send me a pin. Leaving in 5.
How did he drop his moto in a spot where it's fine for the Subaru?
Well, he had turned off of that road and very quickly decided he didn't want to be off of that road. And when he went to turn around, he did a oopsie doopsie gravity one. And then he could not pick it up. So I didn't really think about it. I just grabbed something to drink. And then I jumped in the car and I pulled it up on Google. And it was like 57 minutes. And I'm like, Jesus, God. All right. So... I did my very best.
But that's assuming you're going like 5 miles an hour on the gravel. Like, you can do 60.
No, you can't. Not on this gravel, Kenny.
Hold my beer.
This gravel, let me rephrase that. You could drive faster on this gravel, but I was doing the solo rally driver thing of I had Google Maps, like my phone was in the holder on the dash. And I was using Google Maps to tell me how tight the corners were. And I did shave like 15 or 18 minutes off of that. But you're definitely not driving 60 on that gravel.
And it's tough, too. Like, you know, you got to have TikTok open, too, right? Like, you got to be watching some TikTok. So that takes some speed off, probably.
No, it's just that some of it, like, it's pretty gnarly. And if you lose a wheel off the road, well, you probably lost the car, too. Like, it's probably just, it's a fiasco, if you will.
Yeah, we need to get you a side-by-side, a street-legal side-by-side, and then you can just rally that thing. And then you wouldn't need to get a truck. Man, I'm solving all your problems over here. You got anything else going on?
Well, I did what I considered to be the rudest thing, is I hop out. Tom's chatting with me. We're like walking down to where his bike is. And he's like, hold on. And I was like, no. And then I picked it up by myself just to be a dickhead. And
now he has a hernia.
I don't have a hernia. That spot's always been weird in my belly. So yeah, that's the rest of my week. And now Andrea is going again because I rudely interrupted her. Sorry, Tom. I just had to let, like, I don't know. However many people listen know that you made an oopsie doopsie.
Well, I mean, that's the thing about, you know, adventure bikes are really cool. But, I mean, to give you an idea, I don't love doing ultra techie stuff solo on my Husky. And it weighs 260 mm-hmm. wet. Like, the way I'm riding it, it's 260. And he's on a Tenere 700, right?
Yeah, so 450 pounds.
Yeah. Ooh. Add 200 pounds. Like, fuck that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. Like on the Ultra, for the most part, I'll do whatever, what the fuck ever. Not a problem. And it's only 60 pounds lighter than the Husky, but just that amount of weight, I can basically, if I had to drag that thing up a hill or down a hill or whatever, you could pretty much do it. But even getting
How much does it weigh? Like 200?
It's 195, 200, something in that ballpark. So it's 60 pounds lighter almost exactly than the Husqvarna.
But what do you weigh?
160.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Makes sense.
Yeah. The moral of the story is big motors are cool until you got to pick one up by yourself. And it's pretty scary.
Yeah. I know somebody that was riding two up on an Africa Twin. And when it fell over in the snow, they walked until they found someone with a tractor to pick it up for them.
Yeah. Right. And because that's another 100 pounds heavier, right? Than a Tenere. Probably 60 or 80 pounds at least.
Yeah, it's 550.
Yeah, there's some big bikes out there.
My God, that's a huge bitch.
And by the way, homework for everybody is go look up. There's a video of a guy that hoons one of those things with some crazy exhaust on it. And his favorite thing to do is this is like a stretch of interstate. And he'll get in the left lane and get behind somebody and then pass them in the left lane, which is the dirt. It's just like the middle. And he passes him at like 110 in the dirt and then gets back in the left lane again. And it sounds glorious.
I think going to win a Darwin Award.
I think he needs a video of him doing that to a cop.
that would be awesome.
And then just riding, like, you know, you could kind of plan a little bit, like know where you could just, you know, totally just ride it off, you know, through a field or down a, you know, a 4x4 road or some shit like that.
The moral of the story is Africa Twins sound amazing with exhaust on them.
All right, Andrea, go. Because we got new shits.
I don't think I've done anything cool this week, have I? You have a better memory than I do.
I can't recall.
I haven't really done much. I went for a hike. That's pretty much it. Went for a hike. Made one last try at beaver trapping. And oh, I didn't tell you this. I went and picked my traps up today. And just, you know, I've been trying to figure out what the fuck I've been doing wrong because I haven't caught anything. And one suggestion that I saw, like one strategy, is that you find like a kind of like a small part of a dam that's, you know, relatively shallow. And you just kind of kick like the top few inches of sticks out of it. And that way, just enough to kind of like let the water start to make noise right there, because it's like the noise of the water running that kind of triggers the beaver into making the dam or repairing the dam or whatever. You just kick a few sticks out. You set your trap next to it, like parallel to the dam. And what is supposed to happen is the beaver comes along and it's like, oh, fuck, I got to repair the dam. And it grabs some sticks and it, you know, swims over there with its sticks and mud and whatever. And it smells the beaver lure that you put in your trap. And it's like, oh, shit, what's that? And it drops its sticks and it goes in your trap. Well, the fucking beaver repaired the dam and like used the edge of like one side of my trap as like an anchor for some of the sticks and just like closed the door on the trap because it like jostled the trap enough to like to trigger it. So,
or maybe it was like, you know, a golden retriever with a stick trying to go through the doggy door. And like, it was trying to go in the trap, but like the stick got caught and it just lost interest. And it's like, ah, whatever, I can't go in there.
Yeah, that's kind of what it looks like. It looks like it jammed some sticks in that area and it shut the trap door and was like, oh, okay. And then just like kept jamming some more sticks like in front of it and stuff. And yeah, that was the last one I picked up today. It's also like the trapping season goes through the end of this month, but turkey season starts on Sunday. So I don't want to deal with both at once. I don't have the energy for that. So
What do you hunt turkeys with?
A shotgun.
Okay.
And a turkey call.
And you just use like what kind of like shot are you using?
Oh, it's technically it's bird shot, but it's a
it's like the really really like big bird shot.
Yeah, it's like a number 3 or 4. I think, I don't know. Mine aren't a combination of the two sizes. Some of them get really fucking fancy. I actually went by the gun shop today because I wanted to get some more ammo, and all they had was some stuff that was $60 a box. And I'm not talking about like a normal box of shotgun shells. It's like whatever, 20 shells. It's
correct.
It's fucking 5.
Yeah, it's like what buckshot comes in.
Yeah, yeah. It's like,
yeah,
a,
but that makes them $12 a boom.
Yeah, so I'll just make do with what I've got. I'm going to go and shoot my gun once at a piece of poster board to just know that I know the pattern that I did that last year just to check it. So I'm pretty familiar with it, and I'll have enough. If I don't, I'll go pay $60 for a box of five shells.
I probably have 1,000 rounds of 7 and 8 shot in my basement.
Yeah, I mean, we have not 1,000, but we've got a fuck ton of shotguns.
It's from sporting clay stuff.
Yeah, we've got a lot of that stuff. But I'm getting ready to start some seeds for a little garden. Gonna try soil blocking this year. That can be another new topic that we randomly get into. It's where you start seeds instead of using like the little plastic pod things. You use a little device to kind of compact a little cube of soil and seed starting mix and some other stuff. You compact it with this kind of a press and a mold. And I really wanted to buy one of those. And I was looking on Amazon, and the ones that aren't just like total shit that would just break in a season are like $75. And I'm like, fuck, I can make this. And so I went and welded up a little like mold for soil blocks. And I've got it mostly finished. Hopefully it works. Pretty sure it will. I don't see why it wouldn't. So, yeah, that's the most exciting thing I've got going on right now, was fabricating.
All right.
I'm sure a few of our listeners are into gardening, and someone will be like, one person's going to be interested in that, and everyone else will be like, what the fuck is she talking about? But that's most of the shit that I do now. So, yeah.
Should we talk about new stuff?
Yeah, there's lots of new stuff.
There's lots of it. Let's do it in batches. Let's talk about fork stuff first.
Okay.
Fox has teased at Sea Otter a prototype inverted 38.
It's pretty rad.
Yeah.
Is that it?
That's it. That's it. I mean, there's no real details about it.
I just don't. So many people have tried. There's nothing wrong with upside down forks. That's not really the problem. However, the weight issue, the weight issue on a bike compared to a moto, that's a big problem. But also single crown, trying to make an upside down fork work well. Single crown upside down, just something about it doesn't work.
Well, the only thing that I'm going to say, there was a lot of, I don't want to say problems with the RS1 because that's not true. And this is running what looks to be a traditional front hub. So we don't have predictive steering style, you know, proprietary front hubs. I'd say that's a big plus. But unless Fox has designed a way to limit damper full extension, this is going to be tough for the average consumer. Because when you ran the RS1 at max travel, the two dropouts lined up. But if you ran it at a shorter travel, you had to align each leg with one another in order to pass the axle through the through axle slots.
And that's the other thing about like on a moto. Yeah, it's not that big a deal. But how often are you taking a front wheel off on a moto? Like almost never. It's just for the most part, it becomes a non-issue.
I don't mean alignment as in twist. I mean alignment as in pushing the damper in.
I know what you mean. I know. Getting an axle through is challenging.
And well, what you would do is you would put the axle through the fork and the hub on the long side and then push down on your handlebars just a little bit, because you're only talking about like 20 millimeters or something, like 10 to 20 millimeters, depending on where your fork is set, and then push the axle the rest of the way through, it was fine for me because, well, I never ran mine shorter. But I've done it on shorter bikes, shorter travel RS1s before and just in the shop. And yeah, I mean, I didn't really have a problem with it after I figured that out. But I can see how some people wouldn't figure that out.
Yeah. So I don't know. That would be, if I had to crystal ball something that would make this really nice, that would be a change that would be possible. So.
Well, I think if you're talking about a single crown downhill fork,
right, but
you're going to be running it at full travel anyway.
You're not, because it comes in multiple travels, and
I think the twist is going to be the problem. It's just going to be, even on a moto, like you crash a moto and it's got a freaking upper triple clamp and those things will tweak. So you're missing another whole freaking clamp. I don't see it. I just don't know. People are obsessed with the look. I think the performance has just never been there for any of these single crown upside down forks. They're going to be heavier. I think you could just get the same amount of performance with the same amount of weight with a traditional fork.
I think isn't the draw to it that your fork seals or the foam rings inside are always lubricated?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's one thing. But look, we've already got these Axis batteries. You've already got one on one side of your fork. Have the one on the other side of the fork run like a little pump, and it pumps some oil on your seals every once in a while. It'd be great. And then you don't need a stupid upside down fork.
All right. While we're forking around.
Oh, Jesus.
Let's see. There's a flight of, so model year 26 RockShox, new colors, and flight attendant gets two new options. So
is that not the same red that they were using before?
No, it's a different red.
Oh, geez.
I know. So
why don't they make the air can on the shock also red instead of just putting red stickers on it?
Because it's anodized aluminum.
Okay, they can anodize it red.
But then it wouldn't match the painted red on the magnesium. We would just be Kashima 2.0. So the deluxe gets some updates, and the electric red comes in all the forks you can imagine now, from Rudy through Boxer and everything in between. And then the two updates for flight attendant, one I think is really stupid, but whatever. I'm going to talk about it anyways.
I mean, Nino wanted it, so it's not stupid.
Yeah, Nino won on 26 inch shit when that existed too. Just because Nino, so here's the only thing is like, it's called launch control. So you push some buttons, beep, boop, your bike fully locks out, and then it unlocks after, or it goes into auto mode after a duration of time, which is really cool.
I mean, that's such a narrow use case.
Hold on. This is
it's just a software update. It's not like they made a whole new fork. Keep talking.
You pick how long you want it locked, and then flight attendant will stiffen your bike up for maximum pedaling efficiency and auto and return to auto after your preset time or when it detects a bump. That's the part of it that I don't understand. So, like,
isn't that kind of how it normally works?
Well, no, yes, but it's like it turns off launch control when you hit a bump. So let's say, like, I don't know how big of a bump that is. What if you wanted launch control for, like, a minute?
Or you had to take a shitty line at a race start and you went, like, off the, whatever, you went to the edge of the 4x4 road that the race starts on?
Yeah, or there's, like, pavement and then, like, a gravel bit and then single track. And maybe when you fall off the pavement, it unlocked itself? Like, I don't know. I understand it. I'm just going to, like I said, I'm going to pick at everything a little bit. That's my only nitpick. Like, you should be able to tell it, like, no, fuck you. I want it locked out for 90 seconds or whatever. And it's just locked out. It's like, eat shit and die. I don't care. Here's the fucking no damper juice moving. Fuck yourself.
Can I tell you the new feature that I'm excited about?
Oh, God. Yes, I am too.
You can get a, well, there's fork only now, so you can have a hardtail with flight attendant, which I think would be fucking amazing for single speeding. That's what I'm going to do. Like, when I can actually ride again, that's going to be my present to myself. Is a
new Cid 35 with a...
Exactly. Or just the upgrade. Like, I can put one of these dampers in the fork that I have.
I don't know if you can. Yours might be a 20.
No, I have to look at it, but either way, however I have to do it, that's going to be my present to myself, is that's like the you're not crippled anymore present, is I'm celebrating with that damper in a fork on my single speed.
Mm-hmm. Do we want to roll over into wheels?
Oh, man.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, just to make sure everybody's really gripping the edge of their seat, let's talk about tires.
Oh, my
God. They mount to wheels.
We're going to take your privileges away.
Fuck you. Continental releases new XC tires. The names make no sense. We've got the Dubnatol, the Trinotol, and the Magnatol.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, their old tires also made no fucking sense whatsoever. So I guess they're just leaning into it.
I mean, they almost tried to make sense. You had Dub, which is like two, Tri, which is sort of three, and then they did Magnatol. Mag is not related to any number, unless it is in like a language that's not a romance language that I don't know.
I guess the thing that really gets me is when I hear Magnatol, I would think a Magnatol goes like fucking ham. Not just ham for an XC bike, but like a Magnatol, that is reminiscent to me of like an Aggressor. You know, like,
is it just not? Is that like the lightest one?
No, but it's the biggest XC tire.
All right.
So it's not I mean, it's just a Recon. Like, look at it. That's a Recon. That's a Recon race. Or that's a Recon race. And that's something in between. I don't know. I'm going to be a dick. No, that's what it is. Aspen, Recon race, Recon. They did it. They finally made a Recon. Good job, Continental. DT Swiss is going to sell carbon rims only.
Okay.
You got thoughts on that, Kenny?
Like they're not going to make aluminum rims anymore?
No. Like you can buy hoops now.
Ah, gotcha. I don't know enough about the actual DT carbon hoops, probably because they're always part of system wheels, so I just am not interested. I suppose if it came on a bike I bought, I would have run them and try them out, but nobody was like going out of their way to buy DT carbon hoops. I'm sure they're fine. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
I mean, I haven't really seen that many problems with any of the DT wheels unless someone just honestly just fucks one off. Like the couple of times I know it at Absolute Bikes that we sent a wheel in for repair, like they did a good job. Like they, you know, took it in. I don't remember if the customer got like a crash replacement or...
I know we did a couple of crash replacements, and like back in 2019, they were like $250.
Yeah, like it was reasonable to replace them, and they rebuilt the wheel. They did it quickly. Yeah, I mean, I don't really see a problem with them. Like they never seemed too fragile for, you know, the bikes they came on, and seemed to hold up pretty well.
They've gotten shallower, which is good. The only thing that I don't really like is I think it's going to be a tough sell that it's $180 for crash replacement and the rims cost $600 each. So you put some labor, some hubs in there, some spokes in there. You're going to have a pretty pricey wheel set pretty quick. So I don't know. Like, I don't see myself reaching for a DT rim if that's what I was going to buy. Like a reserve rim is $50 more. So, yeah. We want to talk about DT350 DEG?
Sure. I think we mentioned it at some point because they were spec'd on some Santa Cruz wheels, some reserve wheels.
Mm-hmm. And they're going to come in cool colors, some limited edition ones.
That looks like Easter colors, like that light green and the pink and the blue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're
like opening up your Easter basket.
It's not that they're ugly colors on their own. I just don't know if they belong in the mountain bike world.
Yeah, like I can only see putting those on an all black bike or an all white bike.
Yeah,
God, that would be pretty hot if you had an all white bike with like the freaking baby blue hubs. That'd be kind of hot.
Yeah, I mean it's different. I don't hate it. I just don't see it working on most bikes.
That's okay. I think the people buying these hubs don't care if they look... I think they're going to be garish in a positive way, if that makes any sense.
Sure.
But hey, pastel. Your hubs can't fade in the sun if they're faded when they come out of the box.
That's accurate.
pre-faded. We want to talk a little bit about some bikes real quick.
Let's talk about... Maybe we should finish off with the Levo. So we'll save it for last.
That'll be the last bite.
Yeah. So I got a couple other things. SRAM is showing an e-bike compatible dropper, meaning that it's just going to have like a little boingy boingy, possibly magnetic power cord thingy for a dropper, for a wireless dropper. I should be more specific. So they're making a wireless dropper wired, just like they've made their wireless rear derailleur wired on new e-bikes.
Yeah, I mean, but that's really nice. Like, if you only have to charge one battery.
No, I think it's actually cool. I'm just making fun of it because that's what we do here. Mm-hmm. But I think it's actually legitimately cool. So that would be neat on an e-bike, just like the, yeah, why not have a, the whole idea is, right, you get your consistent good shifting, you don't have an extra cable on the front, and if you've already got an e-bike battery, why not just make your shit always charged?
Mm-hmm.
Because there's really not any downsides that I can think of. So that's cool.
And then you run out of bike battery and your post won't come up and you're stuck in your easiest gear because for some reason you were climbing with your seat all the way down. And then, yeah. Oh, speaking of SRAM, Kenny, have you ridden the new Eagle 90 mechanical?
I have not. I have some on order, but I have not ridden it.
I have.
Uh-huh. What do you think?
I got some bikes with it and we put one together. And
What does it do?
I don't really know how to say this without sounding like a SRAM, like paid shill, but I expected it was going to work well. I didn't expect it was going to work fucking fabulous. Does that make any sense?
No, that's cool.
Kind of like their other mechanical stuff that's not NX.
Yeah, but this is a whole nother level. It's good.
It's really
fucking good.
Was it 70 cheap. Or 90?
It was 90.
Okay.
And it's cheap. You can get a kit in a box for, it retails for $670. Like,
that's cool. I like it.
I mean, I have no qualms or complaints or anything. It's just good.
I still think SRAM needs to make a rubberized lower portion of your lower derailleur cage so that people quit breaking cages.
Yeah, but okay, so this is something that we ordered and I'm not a fan of. MRP makes that little bolt-on bumper.
Yeah, bumper won't help the horrific scenes that I've seen.
Well, here's my big issue with the bumper, which is I'm hitting my derailleur on stuff and my derailleur is failing. So I'm going to bolt something to my derailleur that makes it stick out more. So it hits on more stuff. Like you're not reinforcing the part that breaks. You are increasing the reach of the part that breaks.
But yeah, why not make it out of rubber? Because the upper portion, the upper pulley is the one that's really needs to be precise. The one on the bottom just kind of hangs out. I mean, still make it like rigid enough that for the most part it's straight, but when it gets absolutely walloped that it will move out of the way in some fashion. So,
or when it gets walloped, it would get walloped directly into your spokes and then fuck everything off majestically.
You know, I mean, that's a possibility. That's a possibility. What if they only make it where it bends in one direction? It only bends outward.
How would that help when you hit it though?
It just bends out of the way and then snaps back. The whole idea is you don't want to destroy your derailleur cage. We need to save derailleur cages.
I know, but the only way that it needs to move is rearward, which would be limited by the amount of chain you have. So that's
it'll kind of like move back a little while, like for a little bit, and then it's going to like all bend sideways and shit and then snap back and then it's going to be fine. So it'll be perfect. I don't know how you're actually going to engineer it. That's not my problem.
Okay. So yeah, there you go. What else are we going to talk about? We want to talk about this new salsa spearfish.
Let's talk about this Cascade Link for a Stump Jumper 15.
Oh my god, I saw that and I already forgot about it, and I'm so angry when I like everything about this makes me angry, and I love to be this angry about it.
Yeah, I mean, on one hand, I think it's really cool that people are making kook shit like this, and maybe it's fine. I got a couple thoughts. One is, let's just get it right out of the bag. It's $2,000 for an add-on piece.
No, let's get the cat out of the bag a little bit differently, which is if you want to do all this shit to your bike, you bought the wrong bike.
Yeah, I think that's a very accurate statement. And the big thing I'm noticing is, holy hell, the chain wrap on the...
That's what I was just looking
the
at.
The chain wrap on the chain ring. It's holding it on to four, like, teeth. There's four teeth.
Is it four? I was going to say eight.
I don't know. We'll call it four. Maybe six. It's ridiculous. There is no way that is going to last long term or not pop
it's
and skip.
About seven.
I guess they just assume the folks buying this are not going to ever pedal hard.
Yeah, that's real sketchy looking. And where would that, when you sag the bike, what direction? I'm having to like wrap my head around.
Well, there is no, so there's no chain growth.
What?
I was just wondering if it's going to.
Well, the axle path is rearward first.
I thought the whole idea behind this stuff is that you essentially don't have. You don't have pedal kickback. Is that not the entire idea behind it?
It is, but
I was just wondering if when it moves, is it going to touch more of the chainring or less of the chainring?
More. Okay. Because the axle will move higher, so the lower part of the chain must move upwards.
So you might get up to 10 links touching the chainring at once.
Yeah, well, anyway. Hey, it exists. I mean, cool. It's fun to make fun of stuff that you'll probably never own, I guess. But, I mean, it's cool that it exists. I'm glad people are thinking outside the box and doing weird shit. But, and I'm sure there'll be a handful of people that buy it because it's so weird and it's so expensive and they just want to have something that their neighbor doesn't have.
And, you know, like, at that price, too, no one's going to buy that and be like, oh, this kind of sucks.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody
Everyone's
is going to say
like,
that.
Oh, my bike is so much better now. My bike is so much better. It's so awesome. It just, I can ride the double black diamond downhill trails on it now.
Okay, this is what I'm going to come up with two numbers real quick. But so first of all, this 100% voids your warranty with Scenic or with Specialized.
So how much, how much did you say it costed?
$2,000.
So that's like a third of a new bike.
No, let's approach this a different way. So you don't have a warranty, right? So let's see. Who makes something high pivot? I can't even think of it.
Deviate?
Transition probably does, right?
Yeah, Evil makes something, don't they?
Transition doesn't. Okay, so you're not going to have a warranty, okay? So what you could do is you could sell your stump jumper frame for about $1,000 probably. It's a modern carbon frame, right? I think you could get a grand for it. Let's say $800. And then you could take the $2,000 you were going to give Cascade. Now you're at $2,800. You could just buy a fucking high pivot bike that would have a warranty.
There you go.
Also, the first time someone wheels one of these into the shop and says, my bike is creaking, I'm just going to point back out and be like, leave. I don't care. I just don't care. There is so much shit hanging from so many places on this thing. And I guarantee that this is never going to cause anyone any issues.
Yep. But it exists. All right. Next up, what do we have?
The salsa stuff?
New one-up handlebar?
No, let's talk about bikes.
Okay.
So what's the travel on the Spearfish? They don't say in this article.
Well, it comes in a 100 or a 120.
Okay. And then their next up travel bike is 125.
Yeah, but I think that's a little bit different bike.
All right. Keep going. So
the Spearfish is just, it's re-released and it actually looks like a modern bike. And I'm kind of excited about it in a funny way. So, yeah, it looks neat. But I don't know why Salsa thinks they can get $3,500 for a carbon frame. That's a lot of money for a Salsa. Like a whole lot of money. So.
Why is the. Oh, never mind. I was reading that wrong. Never mind. Don't worry about it. I read the words on the page the wrong way.
Okay. Cool.
And I was confused by my mistake.
We want to talk about this LOL Katana.
Sure.
Did y'all see this? Sexy beast.
I have not seen it.
That is the opposite amount of chain wrap as what the Cascade Link had.
Dude, your chain almost touches
at the top of the chain ring.
Yeah, this thing is something. Or this bike is something.
What does it do?
The derailleur has no pulleys. All the pulleys live up by your feet. So if you've got a really long hang down, and you get your pecker caught in the chain, it's going to be really caught in the chain. I don't know.
That's a SRAM X9 derailleur.
It used to be. Like, they definitely got, that's a SRAM and
or an XO 9-speed derailleur.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking.
Or an old XTR.
Nah, that's SRAM.
But
I know that look.
I love how everybody's like, yeah, your derailleur doesn't hang down, but your frame hangs down a bunch. So I'm not saying that you hit your frame a lot on a single speed, but I am saying that if you happen to hit your derailleur cage on a rock, it also happens to be your entire fucking rear swing arm. And they designed this to go with their own drive system, but they didn't figure out how to mount the cables to the chainstay, so you just zip tie your cable to the chainstay. I'm just on a tear of being a dickhead tonight. You looking at these pictures, Kenny? You got any words for this abomination of a bicycle?
I looked really quick. I couldn't find it. Where are you guys looking?
I just Googled LAL Katana.
Ba-boom. All right, let's take a look here. Yeah. It's, so this is the, college, high school kid or whatever that was doing that weird derailleur thing? Didn't we just...
Oh, yeah, I remember seeing that.
Didn't we discuss that at some point?
Yeah, I saw that derailleur and said that used to be a SRAM 10-speed derailleur, 9-speed derailleur. 9-speed.
And maybe, I guess this would be a good candidate. A couple thoughts. This would be a great candidate to make wireless, so you don't have that abomination of a cable just randomly zip-tied on the side of a nice carbon thing. And I know it's a prototype, but, it's pretty crazy. Derailleurs, I don't know.
It's tucked. Probably won't hit it on anything.
Yeah, it's with people ripping derailleur cages off, maybe SRAM needs to get on board with this.
Hire that kid.
Yeah, and make this thing wireless. It's fully tucked. And maybe this is a solution for people blowing off transmission cages. Yeah, I'd like to ride it. It's interesting, for sure. I put that up there with the Cascade Link. It's definitely pretty out there.
It's a thing.
But yeah, it's...
Oh yeah, we haven't talked about the Levo yet. We're going to do that now.
That'll be the big one, I think. Anything else we want to talk about?
Raceface has a high-rise carbon bar, 55 millimeters of rise. Come on now.
And the 1UP V2 is available in a 50. I told people it was going to be a thing, and now it's a thing.
Hey,
I'm glad they added a dedicated 760 millimeter size, which is a very, I think that's a very popular size.
I think so.
I think a lot of people get a huge wide bar and ride it, and they're like, I'll just trim a little bit. Just trim a little bit. Then they end up back down somewhere around 760.
Well, the big reason they do it is because they're tuned differently.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So if you cut down an 800, it becomes really stiff, whereas the 760 is designed to be a 760.
Or you could just buy a bar that comes in 760 that's so scary and just ride it. I'm talking about my Envy bars. They flex a lot, and they're limited at 760.
Got it.
My favorite is when people are buying handlebars, and they're like, well, I don't know. And I'm like, well, do you want these trimmed? And they're like, what size do you ride? And I'm like,
here's the thing. 690.
I was like, here in this, and I love telling people this. I'm like, look, I'm 6'2", have like a 2.5-inch positive ape index, and I ride 750 or 760 bars, depending on the bars.
That's kind of the area that I am in also.
They're like, okay. And I'm like, Andrea is 5'5.5", and she rides 760 bars. And they just kind of gave me this look, and I'm like, I'm 8 inches taller than her, and we like the same width handlebar. It's all personal feel.
Yeah, for what it's worth, I usually run 770, 780.
There you go. Yeah, I'd give these a shot.
All right. Gen 4 Levo time.
Gen 4 Levo time.
I haven't touched one yet.
I've touched a lot of them.
Thoughts?
I have a lot of thoughts. Hopefully nobody's going to get upset. they're trying to differentiate the S-Works from the standard. So we'll start there. The S-Works bullet points are, it comes with a fast charger, which you can buy in the aftermarket. It is $600. So you get a fast charge. I guess that's cool. I will say,
how fast is a fast charge?
It is 3 times faster than normal. So the voltage on the system has gone up. It's a 14S, up from a 10S. So it's just higher voltage. It's like fully charged. It's in just below 60 volts. The old one, fully charged, was, I don't remember, 42 or something. Yeah, 42. So it's higher voltage. And the basic charger charges at 4 amps. The old charger charged at 4 amps, but watts is volts times amps. So moral of the story is even the base charger on the new one is faster than the old one. But the fast charger is 12 amps up from 4 amps. So
Jesus fuck.
Three times faster. I will say whoever designed the user interface on the fast charger should not have designed that interface. They should have done other things. It is really
like
bad.
Swept.
Done something else. I don't know. I don't want to bag on someone's, baby or whatever, but it is bad. It doesn't make a lot of sense. We had 3 or 4 different people try to just change. Now, granted, didn't read instructions, but here's the thing. You shouldn't have to read instructions on a modern thing with buttons and switches and shit. Come on. Everybody can figure out how to operate an Apple Watch, even if you've never owned an Apple Watch. And there's all kinds of shit you can do with it and little turny dials, but you can pinch shit and touch stuff and turn little dials and it just makes sense. You figure it out really quickly, right? Because Apple's really good at user interface. That's why they're a gajillion dollar company. And this charger has one fucking button on it. And it's got all kinds of blinky lights and shit, but the blinky lights change color. And then you realize you think that you're changing the mode and that it's not taking, but it just changes the color of the LED from green to red to some other color. I think blue maybe, but there's no indicators on what the things actually are anywhere on the charger because they're trying to make it look all slick. Anyway, it was horribly designed. Give me a fucking dial. It's just ridiculous. So give me a switch where I just leave it on each mode. Anyway, I'm sure people will probably think the same thing when they get that. That charger is really silly, but it charges really fast and it's very expensive. So anyway, sorry, we got off track on the charger. What they're differentiating the S-Works with is the charger. The motor itself, it's the same motor. It makes more torque because they program it differently and makes a little bit more power. And it's got a carbon link for one of the little suspension parts. So that differentiates the S-Works. I don't think I missed anything. But other bullet points on the Gen 4, it's very, very heavy. It is very ugly. What else?
I think it's ugly.
I think it's ugly. And it's got a gigantic battery. It's 840 maybe watt hours, 830, somewhere in that ballpark. So it's a giant. And
it's a 9-pound battery.
Yeah, it's huge. It's mullet. So to give you an idea, 10 pounds, I don't want to quote wrong. I can't remember what the entire SL system weighs, motor, battery, whole shebang. I think it was under 10 pounds or something like that. So anyway, back to the specs on the Levo. It's mullet. It's got a giant battery. The motor, even the base one, makes more torque. It's higher voltage now, so it should, in theory, be a little bit more efficient. What other bullet points? It's got a new screen that's got, you can watch YouTube on it. It's got more resolution. It's got a button with an extra little clicker on it. I like the screen and the new remote. I think it's pretty good.
Why is the remote not wireless?
I guess that's a valid question. I mean, the cable just goes right into the head tube and plugs right into the TCU or whatever they're calling that thing these days. So I guess it is another cable on the bar, but it's not that big a deal. I would just hate to have even more batteries on bikes. E-bikes are complicated enough. I'm actually all for just running everything off the main battery and reducing the number of batteries. What am I forgetting, Matt, on specs for the Gen 4? I'm sure it's going to be great. Oh, yeah. So it's a beltless motor now, and it's made by Brosa. And it has a side clasp battery door thing, which I actually don't really love. Maybe it will grow on me. The battery has just a rope that they just like put on the side of the battery. It's just a rope. And you're supposed to like tuck that in somewhere. People are going to like do it all wrong and it's going to get all mashed up and stuff. Just seemed like such an afterthought to me. I just think they could have polished that a lot better. And, you know, to remove the battery from the side, you're supposed to grab a rope. And that's weird. There's a SWAT box special extra storage thing above the battery. If you want to use it, it like magnetically clasps to something up in there, which is cool. You can put tools you don't use very often in there. I think that's a reasonable thing. So that's pretty cool. The range extender is more giant than it used to be. It's 280 watt hours extra. So you're going to have 280 plus 830 or 840, whatever, which is math that no one can even do. It's like over a kilowatt hour. It's insane. Anyway, I think that's about it. Matt, what did I miss?
Really nothing.
Oh, the big elephant in the room. Sorry.
Oh, yeah, class three.
What are your thoughts on
that? Honor system. Scouts honor. Yeah. Don't use class three on the trail. I definitely talked to my rep today. And I mean, reps are reps. They're supposed to sell things. And he's like, well, you know, like you couldn't even ride class three on the trail. Like it just wouldn't. I'm like, dude, no. And he's like, what? And I'm like, no, you could definitely ride class three on the trail. And he's like, it goes 28 miles an hour. I'm like, yeah. Depending on the trail, you could 100% ride class three. Like it's not a problem. And I say that with, and I haven't dug into it deep enough to understand, but Kenny, do the modes offer, I mean, they have to, right? Like when you click a bike up into class three, it really kicks it in the ass harder all throughout the range. It's not like it just.
No, it doesn't. No, it's all the same. All the power levels and all that kind of stuff is all the same. It's just that cap of a speed limit at the top where before at 20 miles an hour, it felt like you kind of hit a wall, especially on a, you know, even moderate downhill, like you'd run into that 20 mile an hour limit so fast. So if you try to like give that extra stab, you know, to like get over something, it actually doesn't give it to you. I'm not being a proponent of saying that we should have class three on the trail. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying the sensation you get on a normal e-bike, that's what it is, where you just have it's an artificial speed limit at the top. Because
yep.
Even lower end stuff, even my SL, there are situations on my low power SL that makes a third of the power of this thing. And there are situations where I want to pedal harder downhill and it just doesn't give it to me. I notice it more on the road than on the trail for sure. But yeah, it's not a lack of power on the other bikes that would stop you from doing class three stuff. It is definitely just a software limit.
But okay. How do I put this? My Levo, I think they've done a really good job because I notice not that I hit a wall at 20, but 19.6 through 19.9 miles an hour. It starts to, it's not like it just stops.
They've done a good job making it a little smooth, but you can definitely tell like this just, you obviously
that's
can't,
all it wants to
yeah,
do.
That's all it is. It does not let you go over 20 with assistance. Of course, you still could with gravity or if you just like stood up and put out 800 watts.
Mash on it.
Then yeah, of course you're going to go over that.
And there's a couple of places on my commute, because that's all I've done on my Levo so far, because we don't have legal trails open, and I try not to break the rules, so I'm not going to just go ride it on the regular trails. And there's a few places that I've definitely ridden my Levo at like 27 miles an hour. It's just, it's not so much, how do I put this, like there's a couple of places on the pavement between here and the shop where I roll over the top at, you know, 18 miles an hour instead of 12 because it's like a little roller in the pavement. And then by the time I get to the bottom, I've just been on it pedaling hard the whole way. And yeah, now I'm doing, you know, 27 or whatever, however fast I just said, I can't remember. I've pedaled it pretty fast. And then it is this odd thing though. When the road turns back up, I find myself almost like old single speed days where like in a race, you'd be descending and you'd look down and you'd be like, nope, nope, nope. I knew with my Arkansas gear that I couldn't go over.
Yeah. You gotta wait for the bike to almost catch up. Like you just have to deal with, like, I am no longer, I have to basically slow down to let the bike catch up.
Yep. And I guarantee if you gave me a Gen 4 Levo and let me go ride Rainbow Trail, I could rip Rainbow Trail in Class 3. There's certain places.
Oh, yeah. Oh, 100%. I was going to say that once you guys finish talking is just since that's the only trail that I've ridden my e-bike on, there are a few spots where it's just slightly downhill and like they've really worked on the trail to make it really fun for motos. Like they put little loops in these sections. Like, you know, if you were on a moto, you do it uphill and downhill. But like, yeah, like Matt was saying, like you get to those spots and it's like, oh, I got to like slow down and let the bike catch up a little bit so I can like pedal at these little rollers. Like it's, yeah.
So
I think it's
100%.
It's going to be a bad idea. It's going to, I think, cause all kinds of repercussions. It's going to piss a whole lot of people off. Obviously, people on the internet are incredibly vocal about it. Yeah, in the age of trying to get more acceptance of e-bikes, I don't think this is how you do it.
I agree 100%.
Yep.
All right. Well, I think that kind of covers the Levo. I'm sure it's going to be a great bike. Specialized rarely misses on stuff. There are things that I think could use a little bit more fit and finish. I think the Class 3 thing is going to be contentious. I don't personally like the fact that it is so freaking heavy, but maybe their new SL will be more of a mid-lightweight. Oh, one more thing. If you choose, you can buy a 600 watt-hour battery that is like about 2 pounds lighter. I imagine that maybe a lower-end model that will come along in the future will probably have the 600 watt-hour battery from the factory. And then you could, of course, run your range extender. So if you want a lighter weight one, it will probably be coming, but maybe it would be on like an aluminum model, which would be heavier. So it'd be a net zero. I don't know. But also, does it matter? A 48-pound e-bike versus a 52-pound e-bike? Does it really matter? I don't know. That's a tough call. I don't have an answer for that, but I definitely really like my 40-pound SL 180, 170 mil bike. So yeah, that's all I got on the Levo. I have one more thought to close out. Should we do listener questions or no?
Nah.
Okay.
This will just be the new shit show.
Great. There is a lot of new shit. There's probably stuff we missed. So I've got one more thing. I want to circle back to Pink Bike. We obviously get a lot of stuff off of Pink Bike. I think they're really good at, they've got some good original content, all the really cool, you know, kook stuff. Gets its spotlight on Pink Bike, which is really neat. But one thing I noticed is, man, I think, you know, the Pink Bike comment section giveth and it taketh away. And I think some people are just misguided on there. This should not be a surprise to anybody who's ever read the Pink Bike comment section.
As are most comment sections.
There are some witty motherfuckers out there, and props to them. And I know there's some super bike nerd, ultra educated people with opinions, like that's awesome. But man, I think there are some people that have just lost sight of how the real world works, and especially how business works, how the bike business works. The number of people who are angry at Pink Bike for having affiliate ads in their stuff. What the fuck is the problem with an affiliate ad? How do you expect Pink Bike to make money? Would you rather Pink Bike make money? Okay, so Levo Gen 4 review, for example. Would you rather Pink Bike get paid under the table and just not really mention it? Because who requires doing a review, what is required of you saying that you got the thing for free, or you get to or you got paid $10,000, $100,000 to write a favorable review? Is there any legal precedent that says you have to mention any of that stuff? No. So would you rather Pink Bike be paid by Specialized under the table, tens of thousands of dollars or more, or who knows what, or whatever kind of deal they make, to give it a favorable review or review it, period? Or would you rather them review it and say, hey, straight up, here's the link down here. This really helps us. Hit this affiliate link if you're interested in this product, because we directly get a piece of those sales.
They do get paid for their content.
I'm sure that they do as well. But what the fuck is wrong with an affiliate ad? What I'm saying is, I would rather someone just have the affiliate link there, and then I know that that's how they're making a piece of their money, which is perfectly fine and reasonable. It's how a lot of people that I follow on YouTube and all that, and they talk about products, and they're usually super, super honest about stuff from what I can tell. Like, they'll bash a product to high hell and say, like, hey, if you still want it, you can buy it from my store. Here it is. But, like, I wouldn't buy it. And I like that stuff. I'm totally fine with affiliate links. I think it's a reasonable business model. And I just am so mind blown how angry people are that Pink Bike puts an affiliate link on something. That's just weird to me. Is that weird to you guys, or am I crazy?
I think that, and this is something you've touched on a lot in the past, is I think people just want to be angry now. And now that I'm back in-person retail, I don't see it as much as I did just doing, you know, e-commerce. But there's some people, I'll give you an example. I promise this tangent is going to come back, so just ride along with me. Person walked up once to me and they're like, hey, I need to buy a shifter. And I'm like, okay, do you know how many speeds it is? And they're like, no. And the kid's like, it's 7 or 8. And I'm like, okay, well, those are different. Do you know if it's SRAM or Shimano? And he's like, I'm going to make it up. He's like, it's on a Raleigh. I'm like, okay, but they made the frame. We need to know how many speeds and who made the derailleur. That way we make sure everything works. I was like, do y'all happen to live close? They're like, no, we're in Canyon City, which is an hour and 20-ish minutes from Salida probably. And they were like, I was like, well, you know, really your best bet would be to take some photos, get the number of gears, and, like, you know, the next time you're in town, we can make sure we're sending you home with the right stuff. And he's like, I just want to buy a shifter. And I'm like, right, I just want to make sure that you're getting one that's going to work when you get home, because there's a lot of different ones and they're all a little different in terms of functionality. And no shit, the dude turns and just takes 3 steps away from me and waits for his family to be like appalled and join him and just walk off. Like, I just think that people have lost their ever loving fucking minds, and there's no way around it. I mean, you don't want to know what one of my insider friends. They got an invoice, so they sent a bike, a review was done, not by Pink Bike. They got a fucking invoice before the review was posted, for the review to be posted. And, like, if you don't want to know how the sausage is made, then, I don't know, don't eat the sausage. But
what do you, I mean, what do people expect from Pink Bike?
That's what I'm saying.
Pink Bike is a massive operation. Like, they've got, you know, obviously, they've got web hosting costs. They have a staff of not a small amount of people. Like, I'm sure they have to carry insurance and blah, 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 all this kind of stuff. How the fuck do people think that this gets paid for? It's mind boggling to me that people are that naive. I just don't understand. I absolutely don't understand it.
Yeah. I don't know. It's like the people that were mad at offers they got on their bikes and Matt worked for the pros closet. Like,
how exactly.
The
like
the pros closet makes money.
Exactly. Why is it their obligation to buy your shit?
Like, we're not going to give you the full whatever retail, not retail, but like market value for your bike, because we have to make money somewhere in this transaction. That's our business model.
Yeah, I just.
You don't get stabbed in the parking lot at Denny's and we make some money.
Denny's.
Jeez. I don't know. That's the first.
We've
shitty
got birthday
restaurant.
Parties for cats, and we're eating at Denny's.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, if after the first time you get stabbed in a Denny's, you might realize that maybe making an extra $100 is not worth it, and then you're not going to get stabbed a second time at Denny's.
All right.
But anyway, that's just my out there in listener land. I know that we have some pretty reasonable listeners who probably understand business. It's insane. Like, am I crazy? Am I the asshole here? Why are people so worked up about it? And what's weird is it's not just like one or two comments. It was like 50% of the people were super angry that Pink Bike has an affiliate link in there. And they're like, go ahead.
But I think in some situations, people, I don't know. So what is that term?
We need to wrap it up.
No.
We don't need to keep going on this rant.
No, we need...
Eyes are glazing. I'm about to give you my computer so you can read patrons, and I'm going to go, like, cuddle with the dog on the couch.
Yeah, okay. So the term I was looking for is simultaneous invention or multiple discovery. So a great example of that is a sewing machine. Someone in one country made a sewing machine.
Where the fuck are you going with this?
And someone in another country made a fucking sewing machine because people were tired of hand-stitching shit. And those people, due to distance and technology, had never seen or spoken or knew a fucking thing about the other. No one copied anyone. They both made sewing machines. I think if that comment section, I don't think we would have had multiple discovery of 50% of them being pissed off about the affiliate link. I think that somebody saw that they were pissed off, that someone was pissed off about the affiliate link, and they were like, hey, me too.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. Well, anyway.
I don't think that many people are that pissed off about that much stuff. I just think that people see other people pissed off about something, and they don't want to feel left out. And they're like, ooh, I better be pissed off about affiliate links too, so everybody thinks I'm cool on Pink Bike.
Yeah.
Fucking
yeah.
Losers.
It's the weird, this like, this stick it to the man mentality is so weird. It's like, look, guys, the big picture, the thing we don't need to lose track of here as us being content creators, I hate using that term, and we do, you know, we do poke fun at some people from time to time, but I think people understand that we do like innovation and everything. The moral of the story is this is a small little industry that we're in, really, in the grand scheme of things. So getting mad at someone that makes a little bit of money doing it is like just bizarre to me. And like, yet we all need to put food on the table. So anyway, people just need to get some goddamn basic business sense. That's all.
And speaking of business sense, let's read our patrons.
Oh my God.
I'm the king of bad transitions.
All right. So if you join our Patreon at $10 a month or more, we'll read your name on air unless you're Clayton. Matt, do you want to take a stab at his
so
at the first at $10 a month we have Zozo,
and then we've got whoa oh ho whoa oh whoa oh 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 baby I've been flying.
Wendy's nuggets taste like they came out of her ass. Tom P bleaches his stink wrinkle. Tom's P Timothy Ty. Oh, sorry. Ty Lover, Ty, Tennessee Zach, Taylor Zwift, Taperboard Pro, Skunk in Your Trap, Samuel, Ryan, Ride Time Extended,
Pork Chop Sandwiches,
Noah, My Pal Dal, MTV Shenanigans,
Mike Jones,
Matt's Formerly Pretty Hands, RIP, Leland, Josh, Josh, Jim the Fucked Up Trike Guy, JC, Jared, Jake D, I'm a hand model, mama, a finger jockey. We're a different breed. Holden, Two Dicks, Green Giant, Gordon, Fuck Bike Rumors, Shitty Website, Frank the Tank, Eric, Captain Fickle, Cam Irish One, Bill, Bearded Bag O' Dicks, Barrel O' Dicks, Anus Anus Balls Anus Balls, AJ, Aaron, underscore, at $11.11 per month, we've got Brought to You By, Taking Gabapentin and Benadryl to See the Hat Man, Patamillan Disco at 14 Australian, Dean at 16.50 Australian, and at $20 a month, we've got Scott, Poop Wrench, My Neck, My Back, Lick My Pussy, and My Crack, Joe, Harley at 30, Troy at 31, and Six Pack Outdoors, Put My Thing Down, Flip It, and Reverse It, at 50. Six Pack Outdoors, best patron ever.
All right, well, there you have it. Until next time, ride safe, take chances.
All right, everyone, thank you all for listening, and good night.
Thanks for tuning in to the Just Riding Along Show.